That's what I love about stories. Really good stories are like an onion. You peel away at this character, and each character has their own, they're their own onion, where they all have the motivations of why they behave the way that they do.
Welcome to Story Power, a new bi-monthly podcast where my guests and I geek out about the stories we're passionate about in all different genres, styles, and formats. And we'll give a few recommendations to you, our listeners. Beware of possible spoilers ahead. My name is Lucinda Sage Midgordon, and I started this podcast during the COVID-19 pandemic. As I watched the reaction of my social media circle, I noticed that many people turned to stories for comfort and help in making sense of the craziness going on around them. And as all good stories do, the world got even crazier. But as Neil Gaiman says, fairy tales are more than true not because they tell us that dragons exist, but because they tell us that dragons can be beaten. Since I believe that stories have the power to show us the way and give us courage to keep going, I wanted to see if that was true for my guests as well. You're listening to episode number 2. My guest today is my sister, Celeste Sage Tate. This is part 1 of a long conversation I had with my sister Celeste about the stories we love. Celeste, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. I'm so glad you're here. And the reason I wanted to have you be my guest is because we talk 3 or 4, maybe 5 times a week. And almost every time we talk on the phone, we are talking about books, stories, movies, TV shows that we have encountered during the week and what we've learned from them. Since that's the case, I said, oh, well, I have to talk to my sister. So I wanted you to tell me why you love stories so much and when you got hooked on them, because I'm quite a bit older than you are. And I know for me, it was talking to Dad about the movies and TV shows that we watched. When did you get hooked on stories?
I think I was actually pretty young. I remember even in grade school, going into my room, I would go to bed early just so I could read. I remember English was always one of my favorite subjects because it gave us a chance to read stories. I think when it really started impacting me the most was when I was actually a freshman in high school. I became more interested in different kind of genres of stories. You know, when you're a kid, you always just kind of read young author stories or young stories for kids. But TV was not as important to me as reading. Mom, even still today, tells the story of how I would go to bed just so I could read before I go to sleep.
That's interesting because I didn't really start doing that until I was in high school. So you did that a lot earlier than me.
Yeah. Well, in high school, I was very fortunate to have a really good English lit teacher who loved stories, who loved reading, loved literature. And she really introduced me to it more than just it expanded me. It expanded me to more than just some of the stuff that I was reading that I think I was starting to get somewhat bored with, but I didn't know where else to go with it. And maybe if I had had you around, because you are 13 years older than me, so I didn't have you to draw from for some of the other genres. But then when I got into high school and I started taking her class, because I knew right away I wanted to take an English lit class. And that was something that was important to me. And I even remember when I was in high school, how other students were like, oh my God, this is the most boring thing. I absolutely hate this. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't wait to read stuff that she was talking about.
Yeah. You know? Like, what was the first one that hooked you?
Well, the first one that hooked me was actually To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh.
Obviously, we were raised watching the classic movie. But I always wanted to read the book. And she had a list of books. You know, she was really... the teacher was always trying to capture our interest rather than you must read this or you must read that or whatever. So she gave us choices that were within an area to so we could do book reports and talk about it. And
you were lucky.
Oh my gosh. I don't know how I got so lucky. So I read that. And then after that, we read and listened to The Crucible.
When I was teaching American Lit, we did that, and the kids were hooked on it because we read it in class out loud.
Okay. Well, and I was hooked on everything. Mm-hmm. And most of the students were like, were bored out of their mind listening to it and reading it. And I wanted to talk about everything. Mm-hmm. It mattered to me because I liked how it made me think outside of myself. I liked how the stories can take you living a life that I've never lived in this lifetime. And the different eras of To Kill a Mockingbird and The Crucible. And in some ways, how some of the thinking of men and women never really changed, even between those eras, and the judgment of people.
You mean how they judged other characters?
Right, and how they judged other characters, right. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, The Crucible was hard. That's a hard, hard story.
It is.
And I remember I lost sleep. When we read that and listened to that, mm-hmm. it was like it lived with me.
Well, did your teacher talk about the two layers of that, of why Arthur Miller wrote it?
She talked to, well, one of the things I liked that she always, which, you know, some people go, I don't understand why I have to know about what the author's motivation was. Mm. And she talked about why she thought it was important that we understood what the author's motivation was. I agree with her. Understanding author's motivation helps understand what your motivation is on how it makes you feel. And that's what I really liked about the English Lit teacher. I'm not sure every teacher goes into this place of how does it make you feel? It's like she was like a psychologist or a life coach or something. She was really fascinating.
Yeah.
So I remember when we read and listened to it, in some ways it was almost like I felt like I lived it, which was really crazy to think that way. But it's not crazy to me. I felt like I understood the main character mm-hmm. and her motivation of her fear.
Yeah.
And what I remember thinking about it was wanting to be heard and known that you were important.
Yeah. You're talking about Abigail.
Abigail. Right.
Yeah.
She didn't feel like she was important. And that was her way of getting attention, like a little kid getting attention in any way possible, just as long as it was attention. It made you feel like you were important. Not grasping until the end what impact it made on other people's lives.
And how many deaths she caused.
How many deaths she caused and mm-hmm. and the frenzy. I gathered from the story, and every time I've watched it, is that excited her. It made her feel like, look what I can control. I can control this frenzy yes. of all these people. And she liked having the buttons to push.
Mm-hmm.
And it made her feel powerful.
Yes. Because in that culture, in the Puritan culture,
right.
Young girls were the low man right. on the totem pole.
Yeah. You were the low man on the totem pole, and you were only important if you stayed in that. But the word important is too strong because you weren't even important.
Right. Because wives weren't even that important.
Right. And that's yeah. why I love, I forget her name right now, the wife.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. I like her character so much too, because what it brings out in her. That's what I love about stories. Really good stories are like an onion. You peel away at this character, and each yes. character has their own onion, where they all have the motivations of why they behave the way that they do.
I liked Elizabeth too. And part of the reason why I identified with her is what she says to John at the end. I considered myself so plain, so unworthy. Those aren't exactly the words she uses, but that you couldn't love me.
Because it's almost like she doesn't blame him if he had this relationship mm-hmm. with Abigail. And he himself is so perplexed by her, like, almost forgiving him. And he's just like, what?
You know? Yeah. He doesn't feel like she forgives him until the very end, though.
Right. But you can see him as they're having these conversations, and I can see it in my mind's eye, even before watching the movies that are made of it. You can see him and hear him, like, his role is he doesn't even almost have words to just make this insanity stop.
Well, and I love what she says to Elizabeth, says to him too. You have to forgive yourself.
Yes. Well, and not only forgive himself, but forgive Abigail too.
Yes.
But because you can tell at the end when he is going to be, they hang him, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He has come to a peace.
But the part, what gets him there is, I love the whole speech about it's my name, because he has to put his name on the confession.
Yes,
and they're going to post that on the church door. And he can't let that happen. He just, it's his name. It's, and the only thing that, I mean, we don't know that now probably, but that's going to taint his children.
Right. That's what I say. His family name. All he could think about was the legacy being left. That mattered to him. My favorite movie adaptation is with Daniel
Day-Lewis. I know.
But I think he's breathtaking in everything. So
yes.
But
well, and both Joan Allen.
Oh, I think she's fantastic.
She is. And then Abigail is played.
Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder, right. Yeah.
It's my favorite because I think it tells the story more thoroughly and from a non-biased point of view. Where other adaptations I've seen seem a little more slanted in a biased form against women.
Yes, well, part of the reason why you might like that one is because Arthur Miller was highly involved in that production. Yes, and he even wrote maybe one or two extra scenes for it.
Yeah, I think he did. From what
for that adaptation. But the other thing that I always pointed out to my students about that story was that Arthur Miller was called before the House Un-American Activities Committee.
Yes, he was.
And so that was partly why he wrote the story, was because of that. He was making a parallel.
Lies and persecution. And that mob mentality that happens with lies and persecution. That the truth really never is able to be revealed because once it's taken to a certain length, what do you believe?
It's only after the fact that they learn the truth.
Right. It's that hindsight. And that's part of life. That's what I love. Now I'm going to bring up To Kill a Mockingbird. That's what To Kill a Mockingbird does for me as well. It's such a similar persecution story of the mob frenzy. And that's why I like that she brings both The Crucible and To Kill a Mockingbird up. That's what our teacher did. She brought, because that's what it's about. What are the lessons you get from these characters? And when I read To Kill a Mockingbird, I saw the movie differently. It's like, oh, I get it. I get it so much more now. Don't get me wrong. The movie is captivating and it's the best ever. And I don't know why you would ever need to redo that movie. But I think one of the things, speaking of people who write stories, I really find it interesting about Arthur Miller. When you look at his body of work is so pro-human beings and the spiritual deep meaning of life.
Yes, exactly.
And I think that's what I love about To Kill a Mockingbird. And her story is the celebration of human beings and our fallacies and our mistakes and nobody's perfect.
Yeah, and our prejudices.
And our prejudices and why we live the lives that we live. And it's about our own personal perceptions and how both stories, how your perception can be brought a new light.
I did not read To Kill a Mockingbird, if you can believe this, until like 3 or 4 years ago. And then shortly after that, she died, Harper Lee died, and I read the second book, Go Set a Watchman, because there was all of the controversy. Oh my gosh, she made Atticus Finch a KKK member. He was a racist. And I said, what? I can't believe that from the first book. And so I went and read the second book, and this is what I think happens. There is this scene where Jean Louise, they call her Jean Louise in the second book. They don't call her Scout because she's an adult now. And she's come home for her 2-week vacation. She lives in New York or Boston or someplace like that. She's a journalist. And she finds out that her father has been going to the KKK meetings. And her uncle, who is not even a character in the first book, he's a doctor. And she is going ballistic because her father is attending KKK meetings. And he has to actually slap her to get her to calm down and listen to him. And he says, Jean Louise, don't you know that your father cannot stand any kind of deception? He goes to those meetings because he wants to see the faces behind the mask. Now, my theory is that people read that he was going to the meetings and they went ballistic like Jean Louise and they threw the book away and they never finished it.
Oh, no. I was going to say the same thing. They probably didn't make it beyond him going to the meetings. And yeah. See, that's why the story power theme that you have here is so important, because I think a lot of people love this, the mm-hmm. completion mm-hmm. and the full circle. But then there are some people who can't handle the sad, the worry, all those emotions that go into finishing a story. And that I can't help but bring up what you just, people probably don't finish it. And I've been, you know, I belong to this, you and I both belong to this period drama appreciation society. And there have been people I see that will read something or start to watch that. I can't finish it. It's just, oh, it's not this, it's not that. And they don't finish it. And I think, well, look what you're missing out on. You're missing on the character development, the individual character development. You're missing out on their development with each one of their relationships with people that can be so enriching to your life. And that's why I like story power, because story power adds to my life. It helps me learn about myself.
There are books that I have read or movies that I've watched that I have not finished. And mostly it's because the characters are going on a downward spiral and it never gets any better and they never learn anything. But there are books that I have read recently that are very difficult. I mean, they're so dark. They're so kind of depressing. One of them is by Octavia Butler. It's called The Parable of the Sower. And it's a sci-fi dystopian book. Oh, yeah. And I got into the middle of it and it was like, oh my gosh, is this ever going to get better? And but I decided I was going to finish it. And it actually did end up a little more hopeful. And it's the beginning of a series of books that I assume, though, it gets more and more hopeful as the books go along. Another one was by J.K. Rowling, and it's...
is it The Casual Vacancy?
Yes, The Casual Vacancy.
Yeah.
And I almost stopped reading that one as well. And then when I finished it, it was like, this is a very important book. This story needed to be told.
Yeah.
Because it was about, even though it takes place in England, it could have taken place anywhere. Right. The middle class people think they're all that, and they are better than the poor people who live over in this other section of town.
Yeah.
And
yes.
And I was like, I'm so glad I read that.
You know, I think that's why I love some of these classic stories, because it really, it still parallels some of our lives that are going on right now.
Yes.
A lot has not changed.
Yeah, really. That's true.
I mean, Ari, my daughter and I, Ariel, you know, your niece, we watch stuff and we'll go, well, that hasn't changed much.
Yeah.
We're still living some of that stuff. And that's what the stories I like. I like the stories where, okay, yeah, there's death in The Crucible. There's death in To Kill a Mockingbird. But there's a lesson in that. And I also think it's important on how we view death.
Yes.
Do you view death as this horrible, tragic thing, or do you view death as a release and you're, this is the end of this lifetime story and you're moving on to another story?
Yeah. You know, there are other stories, like I'm going to go to the movie Gladiator.
I was just thinking of the same one.
he dies. Yes. Right. At the end. Well, and Braveheart is the same way. Yes. He dies, but people take up his banner. Or their banners and go forward creating the dream that he had or they had.
Right.
Yes.
Well, and isn't that what it's all about? Each story that means something to us is planting seeds of growth, seeds of awareness, seeds of self-exploration, which is our ultimate, that's what we're here for. Mm-hmm. We're here to live a life of learning more about ourselves and life.
Exactly.
And what it means to us.
Yes.
And those are the stories that I love. I mean, and I like all sorts of genres. You know, you brought up the sci-fi futuristic. I love those stories. You know, I was watching Patrick Stewart in an interview and they were talking about, you know, why do you think people are so drawn to Star Trek and these stories? And he said exactly what I just said, because they're still life affirming. They give us hope. They show that life will go on and we will continue to have, yes, we will continue to have some struggles and yes, but we always learn about ourselves. And no matter if we're in a sci-fi genre or a period piece genre of Jane Austen or Shakespeare.
Right. You know? Yes. I mean,
because, and the other thing that I think is so great is as you read all these genres, it causes you, if you're ready to see, the connectedness of us all.
And that, and that the story is only being told from that one perspective,
right,
so that we can step back, take a right. step back from what we're actually living, and then go, oh, because I remember when we were watching the original Star Trek with James T. Kirk, and there was that episode of the two people, one was black on the left side and the other one was white on the left side, and they were both black and white, and they saw themselves as completely different, and the people on the Enterprise were like, what are you guys talking about? You're the same.
Right and left could join. Right. I think that's why it made such a difference, that series too, because it took us out of just black and white. It showed James T. Kirk having relationships with all sorts of species and women of color. And that was a big deal.
Yeah. And some of them were green.
Right. Some of them were green. Exactly. And Spock being Spock. The way everybody on the ship were different and how they could still work together. Well, you know, and then I jumped to Stephen King talking about hard stories. Oh my gosh. The Stand. Oh my gosh. There are times you're like, is it ever going to end?
I know. That's such a great book.
Profound.
Yeah, profound. I didn't read that book until after seeing the miniseries, but I'm so glad I watched the miniseries and read the book.
But what I love about Stephen King is he isn't stuck in one genre. He's got The Stand. He's got Shawshank Redemption. You know, he's got all these wonderful stories. And then he's got his horror stuff.
The Green Mile.
The Green Mile was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that, oh my gosh, I remember the first time. I've not read The Green Mile. But I remember when I saw the movie, I felt the same way about like reading a book. When is this going to get better? Because it's so sad. And all the stuff that hits you all at once. You know, Shawshank Redemption's the same way. Is he ever going to find his peace? Because you know he's wrongfully imprisoned.
Yes.
Some ways, you know, in a big way. And yet, but he finds himself in this hell of prison. He finds himself. And he figures out what he wants his life to really look like. And he can grow from that and choose to move on from it. Okay, I just brought the word choice. That's it. Life is choices. And I think there are a certain portion of people out there that don't realize they have choices.
Yeah, they think that they're stuck.
Right.
They're stuck, yeah.
You know, I'm just so sad. Well, you don't have to, you're choosing to be sad. You can choose to do something else.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what these stories, that's why you have to read them to the end. Because that's what it's all about, is that self-actualization of I have a choice.
Well, and then I'm going to go back to John Coffey's character in The Green Mile. He affects every single guy that's on The Green Mile. And the guy, the man.
He's the psychopath.
And the warden.
Yes.
He affects them all in such a great way.
Oh, yes.
And I love what he says. The guards who learn to love him, especially Tom Hanks' character, which I can't think of his name right now, they are so sad when they have to execute him. Yes. But he says, no, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Yeah.
I've lived my purpose. I think of it now. I'm looking at some of the things I've written down when you sent me some of these questions, and it says, you know, bring up a couple stories that mean to you. And at first I had written down Pride and Prejudice and Dune, but they still tell these really great stories of beginnings and ends and middles. And in the middle, it's really messy and really yucky. And you make assumptions about a situation or people or someone.
Mm-hmm.
And all these stories do this. The Crucible, To Kill a Mockingbird, Green Mile, you know, all of them have this middle stuff that's messy. It's really messy, and it's, if I can say that word, you know, and it makes you feel like crap
yeah.
for a while. And you're like, where is this going to take us? And that's life. Life takes you, it takes you through all that messiness, and you have to be okay and learn how to have good coping skills, or to know that this too shall end. And something else will happen that will be really great. And then you might have something else that pops up in your life. That's a place that I think for some human beings, it's difficult to get to the place of not having regrets.
Well, I think one of the things when you're in a valley, I think some people don't realize this isn't forever.
And that's, you know, like right now going on with this pandemic, and some people think it's a bunch of nothing and we're being fooled and we're fed a bunch of stuff to control us and to keep us under their thumb. And that's not real. That's an illusion. And they live that illusion before something like this happens. That routine is the illusion of security. Yeah. And real stories that impact you and make differences in your lives and everyone's lives, and the reason why they become such phenomenon stories and they're so big and all this stuff, is because it tells you that same old doesn't work. And you never know what's going to be presented in your life to teach you that same old doesn't work anymore. It's not growth. It's not expansion. And it doesn't really show you how connected we all are to each other. And we make it hard.
Yeah, we do. We really do. We make it hard on ourselves.
We make it hard on ourselves. We think it has to be all this rigmarole. And when if you just sit back and you breathe and you know you're connected to the universe and you know you're connected to the person that's even in another country, and that we're all in this together, and that when we just take a breath, which I believe right now the universe is saying, it is time to regain your focus here. What is the most important? And take a breath.
Well, and that's one of the things I think that stories are. It's showing us you can't just, you know, have a peaceful life your whole entire time. How boring would that be?
It's boring. Somebody
even says that in a movie or a story or something.
You know. Finding Nemo. Dory says it.
Oh, yeah.
He says to her, you know, I can't have him, you know, I can't have Nemo do this, and I don't want him. I got to protect him. And she goes, well, if all you do is do the same thing every day and protect him, then what kind of life is he going to have?
Yeah, right.
He's not going to have very much of a life.
Well, and that brings us to, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that brings us to the meme that made me say, oh, I have to talk to Celeste on Story Power. Because you were telling me about a meme that you saw on Facebook, and I'm going to read it. Don't love too deeply until you're sure that the other person loves you with the same depth. Because the depth of your love today is the depth of your wound tomorrow. And I remember you said, that's BS.
Right. And I can say that because I lived it. I thought I had, my first marriage, I thought I had entered this blissful, because I had just gone through a bunch of crap in my life. And I was looking for peace, and I was looking for my rescuer, and I was looking for this deep love, and yada, 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 you know, the illusion. And I gave my power to that. And so now that I say I gave my power to that, that meme, that thing you just read, what it really should say is, be careful who you give your power to. And be careful what you give your power to. Because when you give your power away and what you give your power to, that is your pain, not the love.
Well, you have to be in charge of your own life.
And a lot of people don't know how to do that.
Yes, I think you're right. Yeah.
You know, I was listening to Bruce Lipton speak about, you know, the first 7 years of your life is it's being imprinted on you on observation. That's what you're doing as a kid, as a baby, as a child. You're observing people around you, how they're living their lives, and that's somewhat imprinted on you. After that age, what you learn is really, I mean, and he says, I know it sounds young, but really it's your responsibility what you take with and do with that information. And we're not taught that you take the information and you grow from it and you choose what to do with that information. Because I see adults still looking for someone else to give them the answers. You know, people that are my age, 53 years old, looking for someone else to give them the answer of how to move forward in life.
Well, and I think that's why you and I like movies and television shows and books that challenge us, because then we get a chance to go, oh, characters that make choices for their lives. That's what we love, I think.
Right.
And
we don't mind flawed characters, if you want to call it that. People that aren't perfect.
Yes.
That make mistakes and learn from them. And take them to another level of self-awareness, self-actualization.
Yeah, instead of blaming other people.
Right. Blame. There's no growth in that. And that's, I think, the stories that frustrate you and I, is when it looks like it's just turning into this blame story rather than growth story.
The stories where they're blaming, I can't finish reading those.
Oh, me either. It hurts me.
Well, and this is the thing that's so powerful about the Hunger Games series.
Oh, yes.
There were young people who were dying supposedly to save the society. But in the end, the very end, PETA and Katniss learned to live with their PTSD. They learned to live with what happened to them.
Yeah.
They do come out the other side.
Maybe they come out with great love.
Yeah. And maybe even who's their mentor, played by Woody Harrelson? He might even learn from them how to deal with the pain of what they experienced in the games.
Yeah.
And it's implied that maybe other contestants, other champions, I guess they call them, learn that too. They learn how to deal with their pain. And you have mentioned this, you and I have talked about this a lot, that Marianne Williamson talks about that. She talks about, you know, we need to learn to live with our pain. We need to deal with it. We need to face it. We need, instead of medicating it,
or I think a lot of people, well, like recently I was just reading in this, a rereading Return to Love, she talks about that path. The people think they're taking these choices, these paths of least resistance,
mm-hmm.
when really it's the path that gives you the most resistance in some cases. And maybe that path of people thinking, if I just could hang on to what's familiar to me, and this is why they're so scared right now, because none of this is familiar to people. Especially of my generation. We've never had to send children off to war. We've never really had anything serious happen to us. Mm-hmm. And this is the big deal. But they're trying not to make it a big deal because they don't feel safe in acknowledging what has happened globally to people.
Yeah.
You know, they think because in their immediate circle, well, nothing's really happened. So what's the big deal? I want to go back to work.
I want to go back to the comfort.
Being completely knocked out of routine is, they're resisting that. When all you have to do, as Marianne says, is just enter that place of light and love. And then the surrender. See, people, is what she said in this chapter, this recent chapter, is about surrender and what surrender really means. And we are not good in our society of surrendering. Because surrender for most people is weakness, not a strength. And so fear and blame is that first line of defense, because that's going to keep them safe. And that's what all the stories, every story so far, everything I've read, talking about Hunger Games, talking about Pride, anything Jane Austen, you know, all of it. Once all of these characters doom, you know, fear is the mind killer. He has to figure out how to surrender to that. And once he does, everything changes.
I can't remember who, somebody in real life said, he was a soldier. And he said, yes, we feel the fear when we know we're going into a dangerous situation, but you just have to do it anyway. And maybe Saving Private Ryan.
Because the question is asked, and why would you go do that to save one guy's life for needing to get back home? Well, because that's what you do. You care about people no matter what. Well, and Wayne Dyer talked about war and our history. You know, our history has so much war in it. And
yes.
He says, but, you know, this is the realization we're starting to come to now, this awakening of taking other lives and watching other lives being taken. absolutely alters us. And that's probably what's making people feel so fearful and blame right now, because they don't want to acknowledge what's really happening, the alteration that we are going through as a planet. I've shared some things about, you know, we're not going to go back to the way it was. Now is the time for self-realization. The way it was will never be. That's the reality. And I've had people go, pish posh, what a bunch of hogwash. You have to allow people to feel that way.
Because they have to come to their own realizations.
Yeah. I mean, their journey is not my journey, and that's okay. And that's the thing, that our stories, there's always someone in our stories that is willing to be the one that gives you the lesson.
My conversation with Celeste lasted so long that I decided I needed to split it up into two parts. I hope you will join me for the second half of my conversation. And if you liked what you heard, please share it with a friend and give us a review on your favorite podcast app. It will help people find us. You'll find the show notes for this episode at my website, Sage Woman Chronicles, at sagewoman.life. You can leave a comment there. And remember, as Philip Pullman said, after nourishment, shelter, and companionship, stories are the thing we need most in the world. Until next time, this is Lucinda Sage Midgordon. Thanks for listening.